This is Shelton Walden of Walden's Pond, the weekly radio program heard every Sunday right here on WBAI from 1 to 2 p.m. We discuss health, culture, and politics, and a lot more. I come to you with a very, very personal appeal for BAI to help us in our very, very difficult circumstances. What I want you to do is become a BAI buddy for my program. Fill out the secure online form on our website at WBAI.org. To donate $10 or more each month directly from your credit card or checking account, and you will get the member's perks card for discounts around the city posted on the WBAI website. You can donate in the name of Walden's Pond. Please do so. And that will help cut down on on-air fund drive days. Just go to our online donation site at WBAI.org. I'm Shelton Walden, and I thank you for helping out WBAI, Desperate Hour of Need.
And you're tuned to listener-sponsored, non-commercial Pacifica Radio, New York City, WBAI at 99.5 FM. Good morning. This is Hour of the Wolf, a Wednesday night, Thursday morning program dedicated to science fiction, fantasy, enchantment, and the imagination. My name is Jim Freund. Recorded June 1st of this year, during the end of BEA, as it were, Book Expo, our guests were and shall be Sharon Lee and Steve Miller talking about the Liaden universe. Stay tuned. Isn't that a pleasant, nice song? I like that. It's a relatively recent album. All songs by Steve Martin. Yes, the guy with the arrow in his head. And vocals by Steve Martin and Edie Brickell. This is WBAI in New York. The program is Hour of the Wolf. My name is Jim Freund. Now, during the end of Book Expo, let's go back. Thank you, Ken Gale, for covering the show last week. It was a good show. I listened to it and got a couple of emails from people thanking me for the program. And all I had to do with it was asking Ken to do the program. But hey, okay, I guess I played my role there. So, anyway, near the end of BEA, Jim Minns and Tony Daniel, long-time listeners to WBAI, to Hour of the Wolf specifically, you may remember Tony Daniel, aside from being a fine, fine science fiction fantasy writer on his own, he's now working with Bain Books. He did the show episodes of Hour of the Wolf under the rubric Automatic Vaudeville, a live variety show brought to you by the Squash Council of America, for which I was the spokesperson. Anyway, and by the way, yes, this is a good time of year for zucchini, let me mention. So, he set me up with fantasy writers fantasy slash science fiction writers, speculative fiction writers, Sharon Lee and Steve Miller, who have been working on the Liaden universe since, the Liaden universe began. It's a long, long time ago, about 25 years, unless I'm mistaken. We'll get to that. But there's a personal note here that as we were sort of warming up, we'd corresponded through the years in various ways over email, and this is the first time we met. And when warming up before recording a program, I usually tell people about how I got the show, which is basically that, Margot Adler created Hour of the Wolf in 1972. And in July of 1974, she went to the Clarion Science Fiction Writers Workshop. And at that point, I became the substitute host. And not long after she came back, she took a different time slot. I'm telling this to Steve Miller, to one of these two people. And he looked at me and said, wrong, 1973. I'm like, well, excuse me, I know how long I've been doing the show. He said, apparently you don't. I said, and your basis for knowing this is what? He said, I was in that same Clarion workshop as Margot Adler. It's known as the Lost Clarion West, because apparently there wasn't one the year after. There wasn't a 1974, as a matter of fact. It was 1973. Now, Margot had told me, gee, I thought I did it in 73. I'm going, nope, I know best, it was 74. Well, it turns out it was 73. And if that's true, and apparently it is, then this month would be my 40th anniversary as host of Hour of the Wolf. Ta-ha! So that's, listen to the noise in our hallways. So between this week's show and next week's show, we'll say it's an anniversary program. Okay, we'll enjoy that. So we're now going to actually listen to that interview, which is recorded. And if you think this control room is noisy, what with the fans going and all that, and you wait till you hear this interview. We recorded it in their hotel room. And the first part is okay. I've boosted the sound a little and all that. But in the second portion, when they read, there's a 12-minute portion when they read from the latest, yet not yet released, book from the Liaden universe, I handheld my microphone. And this turns out to have been a mistake. One shouldn't do that with the kind of mic I've got. I should put it on a monopod or something like that. But using my normal tiny little gorilla pod, it just makes a lot of noise when I move it around. You probably heard a similar thing 2 weeks ago when Tom Doyle was the guest. Well, now I know better, and in the future when I record things like that, I will either have a different kind and more traditional microphone than the Zoom field recorder that I normally enjoy using, or I'll have a different kind of a grip. But this week, live with it. It's a fine show, a fine interview with good people, and I think you're going to enjoy it. So, set your Wayback Machine for June 1st of this year. It would be nice if I have it queued up and ready to go. There we are. And we will transport you. I believe I actually slayed it, as should properly be done. And from here on in, you'll be hearing the sounds of about 5 weeks ago. Enjoy. Now we are actually recording, although we have been sitting here for a while having a grand time, but it's 4:14 with a 3 o'clock scheduled start on
June 1st, Saturday, June 1st, 2013. And I am Jim Freund, and with me are Sharon Lee and Steve Miller, who I have corresponded with in various ways through the years and followed in ways I didn't even know about, which Steve will talk about in a little while. But I knew Sharon Lee as not only as a writer of and both of them as creators of the Liaden universe, mm-hmm. in which there are some 20 books.
We just turned in the 21st Liaden book.
Okay, so I was pretty close.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not too bad.
And I knew of Sharon as executive director and I think at one point vice president.
And president, yes. I got better, though.
Science Fiction and Fantasy Writers of America, although then it was only Science Fiction Writers of America.
No, it was Science Fiction and Fantasy.
Oh, it already had?
Yeah, they only used the single F because they don't want people who pronounce syphil to go syphil.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, and I can understand that. And also, the is also a misnomer because you don't have to be an American.
That's true.
So Arthur C. Clarke was a member. Michael Moorcock, well, he was in Texas.
He's in Texas, yeah.
But
he's been a member for long before.
From long before he moved to his wife's ranch or whatever. I'm sorry. I have to talk even when I have guests. Quick story. I interviewed Michael Moorcock here in New York, and his wife was sitting by quietly. We're in their hotel room, as we are, and he's such a proper British gent,
yes. mm-hmm.
And a joy and all that. And finally, I asked him, why in God's name did you move to Texas?
I've heard this story.
And Linda speaks up for the first time. And says, because I got damn tired of London.
Oh, I didn't hear that story. Okay.
Okay.
So now he's an American, I guess, but an American in Texas.
Certified American.
Yeah.
And landed alien.
A landed alien, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Steve, I'm going to ask you a favor. I'm going to ask you, to move a scooch a little bit closer to your wife. Excellent. Tell people who you see yourselves as, and obviously your writers, your creators, and précis of your careers.
Précis of our careers. I started reading science fiction, as many people do who are in sci-fi very young, beginning with A Visit to the Mushroom Planet.
My first.
And very early on, I determined that I was going to be a writer. My grandmother was D'Artea Neal, who was the head of the Brooklyn Poetry Circle and later the several other organizations of poetry, lived here in New York. She was a writer, and I thought if she could be a writer, I could be a writer. And so my career actually started with the fact that my grandmother supported the idea that I could be a writer. And it went strangely from there. I read science fiction. I read everything I could read. I had books donated to me. Roger Zelazny gave me all the books that he didn't have room for at one point. And
despite that big house in Baltimore.
Well, we went to... I went to UMBC, and at UMBC... at the University of Maryland, Baltimore County, which was two blocks or so from his house. I had said to a friend, gee, you know, there ought to be a science fiction club here. And thereby got elected to being the first president of the Infinity Circle at UMBC. So as a president, I thought I should do something, so we started inviting writers, and the first person we invited was Isaac Asimov, who wrote me an extremely nice letter and some other correspondence along afterwards saying, I'm sorry, I can't possibly go, because I had said we were looking for the best person we could possibly get to start. And we have a budget. He said, well, you're right, I am the best possible person for you to get, but I can't because I'm going to be someplace else. And so I happen to have just finished a book wherein Roger's wife's name was mentioned because, and the reason I say that is that his name was not in the phone book. Mm-hmm. But hers was in the phone book, so I called up and asked Roger if he would come talk to us. And when he did, he came with about 40 cartons of books, it seemed like, and he talked to the organization. And that actually led to me teaching science fiction at that university.
Uh-huh.
Which I helped me determine down the road that I didn't want to be an academic. But that also led to me becoming curator of science fiction for the University of Maryland at that same library, which, oddly enough, led me going to Clarion and to Clarion West. All of this coming around to what I was going to do was science fiction. I had determined that very young, and that's where I started.
And according to you, that's Clarion West 1973. And it is because of that Clarion West that I have this radio show. Because I had a choice to, I was working with and co-producer with Margot Adler, and she went to Clarion West, and I had a choice of going to Clarion West or as accepted, or taking over her show.
Tough choice.
And I'm not giving it back, unless she asks. I like that, I would give it back to her. But anyway.
And I wanted to be a writer since I can remember. My very first story was How the Rhinoceros Got His Skin, because I had read it and I knew it was wonderful. I had the Golden Book. And I got out my pen, my big fat pencil that they used to have, and the little marble-backed notebooks, and I was laying on the floor in the living room, copying out How the Rhinoceros Got His Skin. My father walked in, and he said, "What are you doing?" I said, "I'm writing a book." And he said, "Rudyard Kipling has already written this book." And he said, "No, see, here in the front page, I put How the Rhinoceros Got His Skin by Sharon. And when I'm done copying this out, I'm going to take Rudyard's and I'm going to put it under my bed so no one will know. And I'm going to pass this off as my original work." I think I was 5. And my father recommended that I should find honest work and keep going to school.
Mm-hmm.
But I read mysteries and folk tales and stuff. I came around, our public library had the mysteries and it kind of eased into the
situation. Where were you living?
I was living in Baltimore County, Maryland at that point.
Ah, okay.
And it kind of eased around, the genre books eased around into romances and then into science fiction. So I was working my way through the library and came to science fiction. I picked up a book called Citizen of the Galaxy. And I hated it.
Mm-hmm.
So I put it back. And
imagine a woman hating Heinlein.
Well, that was a kid at the point.
I'm sorry. Some of the strongest feminists I know are such Heinlein fans. I don't get it. But anyway. Well,
Mr. Heinlein actually, tangent. Look, shiny. Mr. Heinlein was actually ahead of his time. And that's the problem with the people now vilifying him as a ravening misogynist. I mean, he did a lot of stuff right.
He did a lot of stuff right. He did Podcane of Mars, who's such a wonderful character and all that. But his girls and his older women
mm-hmm.
are wonderful. But I submit that if they are of menstrual age...
He did a lot of idealizing,
not,
yes.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, just... Take a look at Stranger and A Strange Land, or Moon is Harsh Mistress.
But you can't argue that Hazel is just a knockout.
Hazel is a knockout. Yes, some of them are. And with Heinlein, all dependent on how you define knockout. But I think Podcane of Mars is one of his best fleshed out female characters.
Female.
But I'm sorry, we were talking about you.
We were talking about me, yes. Well, I didn't like Mr. Heinlein's work, so I put it back on the shelf and continued reading old Perry Mason and Agatha Christie and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And when I came back around again to the science fiction section, I happened to pick up an Andre Norton book, which I don't remember which one, but I went, yes, more of this.
Right.
And I slowly stopped reading mystery as much and eased into science fiction. And I also read romance books. When I was a kid, back when they had nurse books, you know, and things like that, and it was pretty sad, but it was exciting, and it was romantic, and I was leaning toward what we need in science fiction is a nurse book. And then I met Steve.
And I can't say it properly. Bollamore.
Jack
Chocoros used to say there is no T in
Baltimore. Right. That was true then, and it's true now. What happened through a series of unfortunate and fortunate events is that my time at UMBC led me to Clarion West, and by then I was writing short pieces and sending them out. While I was at UMBC, I sold my first piece to Amazing, and Ted White bought that. I ended up with three or four pieces in Amazing over the years. And I was writing for some of the small magazines. I was still married then to Susan Nice. Many of my fans knew from the early days. Sue and I had been an item from 16 to 24 or something, so a lot of people knew her. And at that point, things were going rough for us, and we decided that I would go back to school. And when I went back to school, I took a writing class. Sharon was taking the same writing class for sort of the same reasons as that we were both looking for easy credits.
I worked for the University of Maryland, and at that time they gave you the opportunity to take courses for free. Mm-hmm. So I was going to school. That's how I was going to get my college education, is by working for the university and going to class. And I went, creative writing, that's cool. I can write creatively. I'll sign up for that.
And so we were the elders in the class, and we had a mostly bored instructor who had escaped the Iranian Revolution with his life, just barely. He was a poet who had been imprisoned for his poetry. And he did pay attention to Sharon and I. I'd already had things in Amazing. Sharon had been pushing it at getting something written. And since Sharon and I kind of, we ended up sitting naturally next to each other. And so that was when we first met. And there was in fact an affinity there at about the same time that my relationship with Sue was